Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening to Northern Transmissions. This episode features Jay Tillman, a.k.a. Father John Misty. I had the chance to talk to him about quite a number of things. I was really excited about it. And let's get down to it.
First off, I was reading, when I was doing the research, I read a bit about your youthful days. You grew up in a bit of a, it seems like you grew up in a bit of a religious household. And I was just wondering how or what type of music were you able to get your hands on?
You know, that, around the time that I was growing up was also kind of the mainstream emergence of what's branded CCM, like contemporary Christian music. And so there was a lot of that around the house. My parents were really into that stuff. It was very limited. But when you're a kid and whatever, you're not at the height of your critical thinking skills yet. So whatever, you just enjoy, you know, if you discover a love for music at an early age, that kind of supersedes any, aesthetic sensibility. And then I guess by the time I hit junior high and high school and stuff, I was really just kind of listening to whatever I could get my hands on at my friends' houses, et cetera. But it was generally thinly veiled worship music.
I think you wanted to be a pastor when you were kind of younger as well. Would you think this kind of had the effect on you that to front a rock band?
Yeah, I'm sure that there's some similar impulse. I don't really, if I had wanted to do that, I certainly would have gone and done it. But I didn't. I forget who I even told that to, but, that was just like an example of kind of some kids want to be, and I'm not even sure that I really wanted to be because, the environment that I grew up in, you didn't choose what you wanted to do for a living. You got called to do something. So there wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Understand the distinction there, and especially with something like being a pastor. So like when you're a kid, you've got these weird ass adults around you who are telling you that God is calling you to do this thing, and generally if it's the thing that you want to do the least, that's the thing that you are supposed to do the most. And so that was really, it wasn't like being a kid and being like, I want to be a firefighter, or like, I want to fly a jet plane. It was, the conversation was like, what is God calling you to do with your life? And, people were telling me that I had, and they were intuiting that based on my that I had this like little performer streak in me and was constantly talking and constantly bullshitting and telling jokes and wasn't embarrassed, wasn't embarrassed to assert myself or whatever. And so they, those kind of character traits, weird adults pick up on in children. That was more really the conversation around that kind of thing.
Yeah, interesting. And this is the only time I'll bring up your ex-band, Fleet Foxes. I just wanted to ask, because you already had a career before obviously joining them, and was it a little difficult, walking away? Because I think they became a little successful when you had left the band.
No, I mean, I didn't have a unsuccessful day the whole time I was in that band. I mean, I got brought in. By the time I was brought in to play drums, they were already, they had recorded. They'd gone on one tour, their albums had come out, the album and the EP had come out, and it was all, the writing was kind of on the wall, but it was, a big deal. You just have to take my word for it that kind of cost-benefit analysis, regarding success and one's ability to sustain one's level of success, doesn't inform like big creative, like real creative decisions, you know? I mean, it definitely, in some, just the time that I spent doing it, I gave a lot of time to it. You know, I was in the band for 4 years or something. And so that, you know, that definitely adds weight to the decision. It's different than quitting a band that you've been in for 6 months or something.
Right.
But it's really more the time spent doing something thing that adds gravity to that decision. You know, I mean, I've quit bands that were, you know, like I remember quitting my first band. The first band that I quit was this thing called Saxon Shore that I did with my friend for 3 years or something. And that was, I think I was ages like 19 through 21 or something. And, that was like right before I moved to Seattle, and at one decision I decided to like, you know, quit and move on to, play my own music. And, even though that band was totally unsuccessful, I mean, like we used to like eat yeast packets to fill our stomachs and book our own tours and play for no one and, you know, all that stuff. And that was just, that was a very hard decision too. Like, just because I had really, you know, put a real investment of my like time and energy and emotions and everything into it.
Right.
But sleep, yeah. And not, I mean, I'm not trying to paint myself as like a saint or anything, but you know, it's really like the time spent in a band adds weight.
When I heard the ladies' man was dead, I saw the Rolling Stones stop moving. Saw my ancient hero on the Sunset Strip. He left behind a legacy of now painted ladies wanna hold my gun. Wonder if the whole time I've been acting. When I sang Moon River in that silent film, had I really made a sound when they called out? The humid nights in LA are now silent. I swear that man was womankind's first husband.
Fearfun, if you don't mind. I think you developed the name Father John Misty around the same time, but it sounds like you were going through kind of an interesting period. It was an interesting period for you, like quite a departure from previous recordings.
Yeah, I got to some real like critical mass of dissonance and boredom, and I decided that the only antidote was to like put the baby on the altar and plunge the knife into its chest and drink its blood, you know, like that was, and I think that you can hear, that I hope that you can hear that in the music, that there's, a sense of renewal, you know, which is always, you don't get like real renewal without metaphorical death. I don't know. That was just kind of the way I was thinking at the time.
Because it seems like you did go through a bit of a dark period and lost. I mean, you lost a bit of interest in songwriting. What kind of brought you back?
I mean, at some point, like, the sound of an acoustic guitar, like, made me nauseous, and really the whole, like, the whole idea of self-identifying with this archetype of a failed songwriter, just realized was just draining me of my fucking life, and so I went on this trip. I kind of like I left Seattle in a very open-ended kind of way, and had really like committed to kind of re-examining everything. I started, and by everything I mean because the most important thing to me is like what I do creatively, and so just this state, this period of time, I was like, all right, I'm not like. The past doesn't exist. Like, I'm not this Jay Tillman individual. I didn't make that music. I don't want to be a songwriter. I don't want to live the rest of my life in the shadow of that pursuit. And for some reason, my initial impulse was to start writing that novel that's in the album artwork. And the process of doing that was really liberating because I had no preset parameters around the whole thing. With the Jay Tillman music, I had developed a pretty stringent paradigm in which I could create, and there were a lot of things that I wasn't really allowed to say or really do, including being funny or plain spoken, etc. And when I was writing the book, I realized that I had total liberty, and that I could be humorous if I wanted to, or be satirical or wry, or, you know, and just really employing my actual conversational voice instead of employing a cultivated voice, which I think is what I had kind of done before and which I was totally trapped in. So once I started writing this book and gained access to that conversational voice, it all became very simple, and I realized that, you know, it's kind of intangible. I can't totally describe it, but just realizing all of a sudden, realizing that I knew how to write songs all of a sudden, and then I knew how to sing, and then I knew how to like engage an audience or engage someone's mind or ask something, you know, phrase things in a way that are interesting. And you know, I couldn't do that without blowing up everything that I had done before, without completely disassociating with everything I had made before.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe it makes a lot of sense. And and I think you were interested also in visually kind of translating, I mean, your songs or your ideas. I wanted to ask about the, not to get too more darker, but on the website, the image of the folks carrying all those crosses, that the image of that. Can you give me a bit of a background on that one?
Well, in all candor, that's I didn't design that website. some guy in London did, and I think that he was attempting to exemplify, you know, kind of the imagery and sensibilities and sensuality in the music. And I think that there's if it speaks to anything, it's that I think that there's like a very visible, like kind of funny and uncomfortable juxtaposition of like the sacred and the profane and sentimentality and cynicism in the music. Like most of what's interesting about the music or the lyrics or whatever, or the aesthetic lies within just kind of a counterintuitive cross-section at the center of anything that's kind of interesting about the album, you know, like an uneasy alliance.
I hope you're enjoying our conversation with Jay Thielman of Father John Misty. For more information about the band, such as tour dates and music, you can check out FatherJohnMisty.com or Facebook or the Sub Pop website. For more information about our show, please check out www.NorthernTransmissions.com or follow us on Twitter at Northern Trans. Let's check out the first single off the 2012 release, Fear Fun. This is the song Hollywood Forever Cemetery Sings.
Christ, girl,
the video for Hollywood Forever cemetery mm-hmm. things. Aubrey Plaza was in that one. How did the concept come about, and how did she become involved in it?
It was interesting. Like, Aubrey's involvement kind of, the conceptualization of the video, kind of happened simultaneously with Aubrey, agreeing to do the video. I met her at like a party a couple of years ago. We just kind of, you know, see each other around here and there. And she asked me, if I could come, like, play a small role in this thing that she was doing, and I couldn't because I was on tour. But it put the idea of like working together in that capacity across my mind. And maybe a month later, I sent her the song and asked her if she'd be interested in, or I sent her like a couple songs. I was like, I'm going to make a music video. Would you be, you know, I think you'd be perfect kind of given the tone of the music and everything. And she really, really was into that song, the Hollywood Forever tune. And when I talked to her and heard, like, kind of the way that she was identifying with it, like, the concept of the video kind of manifested almost immediately. But the van scene was something that I read, like, throwing her in the back of the van. That was, like, the day before we started shooting, like, that idea came to me in, like, the middle of the day. I had to go, like, meet up with her and be like, are you cool with me throwing you in a van?
What a sport.
What's that?
I said, what a sport she is.
Yeah, no, I mean, she really is. Like, she's out there. She's one of, like, she's a good actor. Like, she really isn't, like, interested in, like, kind of getting out there and doing weird shit, you know?
That's great. That's great. I wanted to ask you about, I know you're a fan of Philip Roth, and you referenced him on, it's on your bio, I think. Has he influenced periods of your writing? Part one of the question. And part two is, were you aware that he said that he's done with writing fiction?
Yeah. I did hear that. I think that makes sense for him. I mean, I think that there's I'm not sure that he influences what I do. The mediums are, you know, any inspiration that he might give me in like the, you know, writing pop songs, would just be so vague and kind of generalized. Like his, you know, The Human Stain or something, like, that's a story about, or every character is, like, a unbelievable, like, he's one of those authors, I just really get a sense that he is in all of those characters, you know?
Right.
And that his experience is at the core, and that he recognizes the universality of his experience, et cetera. And, maybe in that way, that's not an inspiration to me, but something that the reason why I'm into that is because that's something that I want to do myself, or like an approach to writing that I also kind of adhere to or value or something. He's the shit.
Yeah.
He's America's cranky old genius.
Yeah, I know. He's got quite the catalog of material. It's pretty impressive.
Thanks for listening to Northern Transmissions. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Jay Tillman, Father John Misty. If you want more information about the band, you can go to fatherjohnmisty.com. They are also on Facebook or the Sub Pop website. If you like more information about us, you can go to northerntransmissions.com. Follow us on Twitter, Northern Trans. And a big thank you to Spencer Carson, as usual. And Let's close the show out with one more track. This is the song Nancy From Now On.
Oh, pour me another drink and punch me in the face. You can call me Nancy. Every man wears a symbol, and I know I have mine. I've got my right hand stamped in the concentration camp where my organ screams, slow down, man. Just a couple states below. Fend for myself with what looks I have left. I'll put away a few, and pretty soon I'll be breaking things like how would you. Just a couple states below. Ooh, give me how it was. Please, I've never saw before.